everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Ed Alexander. Ed is producing and engineering our show on this Thursday afternoon, the 27th of August 2015, coming to you live from AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. We live stream the show on my website, buckmastershow.com, and at kvoi.com. And if you want to hear any of our programs, we usually have the podcast available within an hour of the conclusion of the show, and that is available along with the archive at buckmastershow.com. Well, if you're into football, and a lot of people love college football, you better get ready to dial 790-2040, but I'm not ready to give the tickets as yet, but I will be here in about 10 minutes. So be listening. I'm going to be giving away a pack, 4 tickets. Hey, you can take the whole family to the game. The opening game is 1 week from tonight at U of A Stadium, and the Wildcats face the University of Texas San Antonio Roadrunners coming to town. So the kickoff at Arizona Stadium next Thursday evening. And in about 10 minutes as we get ready to wrap up segment one of the show, I will say what number caller we will take, and then we'll give away those tickets. But in the meantime, we have a lot of content as usual. Dr. H.T. Sanchez, superintendent of the state's second largest school district, Tucson Unified School District, is with me in studio. Then we'll have a conversation with ASU Regents Professor Dr. Stephen Pine. Dr. Pine is considered the foremost expert on wildfires, and there's certainly a lot to be talking about. The people up in Washington State and British Columbia, they have been suffering from smoke that has been, some folks up in southern British Columbia have been living with constant wood smoke up in Washington, those fires drifting across the border for 2 straight months. So that's one of the big, I think it is the fire, the Okanagan Complex fire in Washington State is the biggest fire in the state of Washington's history. The live line number 790-2040. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Sanchez, he's always a good sport about attempting to the best of his ability to answer the question and react to your comment. And our Facebook page is Bill Buckmaster. We are still open to accept new friends. So if you'd like to join us, kind of follow what we're doing on the show, go to Facebook. So let's welcome now Dr. H.T. Sanchez. Dr. Sanchez, how are you?
Doing well, sir. Doing well. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on the recent induction to the Broadcaster Hall of Fame.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to that big ceremony. It's coming up now October 15th up in Scottsdale. So that's going to be
exciting.
I have to get out my old TV anchorman clothes. I have to get out the old suit, which I haven't worn since I've been on the radio for about 4 or 5 years. So hopefully, HT, it still fits me. I mean, I bet it will. Do some tailoring there. Hey, since we saw you last, you were at the White House. That must have been very cool.
You know, that was exciting. Tucson Unified School District was one of 40 large urban districts invited by the White House as part of the conversation on closing the spigot on that school-to-prison pipeline and finding ways to encourage our students go to the institution of higher learning as opposed to the institution of incarceration. So it was a great opportunity.
How are we doing here as we kick off another semester? We've got our teachers. Do we have enough teachers in the classroom? And, of course, the bus, the long running now, I think it's we're coming up on 3 full weeks of this transit strike. That impacts your students, too, in a way, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. You know what's a lot of people don't realize is we have so many students that ride the SunTran bus. We have over 1,000 kids who take advantage of the bus passes that we provide them to get to school. So our transportation department is doing an amazing job in transporting an additional 1,000 students that they've worked into the existing routes and created some new routes to get kids from home to school and school to home. The travesty that I've heard is we've had kids who have after-school jobs who can't get to those after-school jobs because,
wow,
they used to use those SunTran passes to go to work too. And a lot of them are really in peril of losing those jobs. So we hope that there's some resolution soon.
Yeah, we certainly do. So do you have enough teachers?
You know, we're real proud of the work that our human resource department has done. In 2012-13, at this point, we were missing 220 teachers. My first year superintendent, we were missing 167. Last year, it was 153. And this year, we're at 99. So as districts have struggled and some have moved in the opposite direction, we're moving in the right direction. And it's our partnership with our Tucson Education Association, our union, their leadership, their support, and delivering a positive message. And I think it's been our pay raises over the last 2 years and ending the whole layoff process that we as a district used to do, two or three years ago.
Let's go to the live line, 790-2040. Liz would like to speak with Dr. Sanchez. Hi, Liz.
Hi. My question is to Dr. Sanchez. Hi, Dr. Sanchez.
Hello.
I read the paper this weekend, some costs with Bristow Learning Center, and my newborn is currently on the list to be accepted into the Learning Center. So I just wanted to get your thoughts, what you foresee as the future of this Learning Center.
You know, the Bricta and Shoemaker Early Learning Centers were two closed schools that a year ago we reopened, and we reopened them as early learning centers. And so part of our challenge is whenever you open a new business, you have a startup and you have some startup costs. And so the startup costs hit us hard last year. But just to give you an idea, we see sustainability in both sites because last year at this time, we just had 77 students enrolled at Bricta. Right now, we have 203, and we're at capacity at 250 there. At Shoemaker, last year at this time, we had 81. This year, we have 187. So that means we have children there. We're paying, you know, that are paying tuition. Parents are paying tuition. And so we really see the long-standing commitment of our district to affordable infant and early learning. So if your little one's on the waiting list, right now our human resource department is interviewing and hiring new teachers for both centers. So we're very proud of that.
Okay, thank you very much, Liz, for the question about the Bricta Learning Center. For those that haven't followed the Learning Center situation, so how many learning centers are at TUSD?
So we have the two large learning centers, one at Bricta Elementary, the other one at Shoemaker, and so that's what they do. I mean, 6 months up to five-year-olds that aren't kindergarten eligible. But then across the district, we have well over 40 opportunities either through our PACE program or our programs where we offer services for students who have learning needs and then some that meet financial qualifications. So across the district, and if folks will go to our TUSD1 website, they can get a listing of all of the preschool opportunities we offer. And outside of Bricton Shoemaker, we're going to begin offering preschool opportunities for three-year-olds going into this year. And it does cost us a lot of money. The state doesn't fund preschools, just like the state only funds half-day kinder. And we invested an extra $6 million a year to offer full-day kinder. So, I mean, we really believe that preparing them early makes sure that they're successful later on.
H.T. Sanchez is with us, and he is now the longest tenured superintendent in a decade. Hard to believe. But H.T., you've been on the job for 2 years and 2 months, and here you are already the longest tenured superintendent.
You know, it's kind of a shocking figure. It was actually one of the guys on my superintendent's leadership team or my cabinet who has been in the district for well over a couple of decades who said, I just did some math, and he said, going back to Superintendent Stan Paz, you've been in that chair the longest, and it's been 2 years and 2 months in a decade. And so I'm looking forward to another 3 years minimum. We have a lot of good work we've done. But yeah, it just talks to folks about the level of challenge and scrutiny. But you can take that as something that brings you down, or you can take that as something that you and your team work to overcome, and that's the approach we're taking.
What's your enrollment now look like here? Have you gotten some numbers in for the fall semester?
You know, we're really happy with our enrollment. 2 years ago, when I first took the job, we lost about 1,500 students from the 40th day to 40th day. Last year, it was around 1,000 students from 40th day to 40th day. So we did our 10th day comparison to 10th day comparison because that's usually really close to 40th day. And so we were projecting to lose potentially 839 students. But to this point, we're only down 448 students, which means over the last 2 years, we've cut enrollment loss by 500. And if we can continue to follow that trend next year, we should break even on loss, or we should be on the plus side. So that's a credit to our principals, our teacher, our dropout recovery teams. So we're sitting right near 49,000 when you include all of our kids pre-K through 12 and all of our programs, our specialized programs like our Teen Parent High School or our alternative programs like our online academy. We're definitely doing good work. Our people are doing amazing work.
All right. Now I will announce the ticket giveaway. We'll take the second caller at 790-2040. Second caller, 790-2040. This is a great deal. A four-pack of tickets to the U of A home opener, and it will be against UT San Antonio, and HT knows about San Antonio, don't you?
I do. It's one of my favorite cities. Go Spurs, go.
Yeah, so we'll have to see who you'll be rooting. You'll be rooting probably for the U of A since you're now here in Tucson.
I will.
Yeah.
I will.
All right. We'll be right back.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you landed 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu. Pedestrian projects funded by the Regional Transportation Authority are now under construction at Treat Avenue and Broadway Boulevard and Craycroft Road in Fort Lowell Park. The crosswalk improvements provide added pedestrian safety. More than 37 high-intensity activated crosswalks have been funded by the RTA to date. We're improving safety and regional mobility for you. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Vero Mori is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. And now at Vero Amore's lovely new location within the remodeled Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, Vero Amore is proud to announce an expanded menu and bar offerings with 16 microbrews on tap and 14 keg wines, along with two separate cooler rooms to keep the beverages at just the right temperature. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday, we'll talk with Pima County Supervisor Ray Carroll. Our Friday roundtable features Dan Shear of the Green Valley News and Jim Ninsel, the Tucson Weekly Buckmaster, noon to 1 on Tucson's AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Also, we're always on BuckmasterShow.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I did Mr. Ed Alexander a favor by saying the second caller. I think we could have probably taken 15 or 20, but we did get a lot of callers. But the congratulations go to Tony. Tony called in. He was the second caller, and Tony and his family will be going to the ball game. I mean, it's a great, great deal. Four tickets, so everybody can enjoy the U of A home opener, which will be 1 week from tonight. So college football is upon us. H.T. Sanchez is with us. Dr. Sanchez is now the longest tenured superintendent in a decade. He's 2 years and 2 months, and so he now has that longevity clause there where he's now top dog as far as being around for a while. Interesting piece in the front page, on the front page of the paper today, H.T., about TUSD has teamed up with some small local farmers to try to bring some healthy food into our school cafeterias.
You know, we're real excited about that program. I mean, when you take a look at all of the concern with GMOs or genetically modified organisms and pesticides, it just speaks well to us teaching our kids about good nutrition and being good, stewards of our natural resources. And we have ecology programs across the district, and so this sends a loud message to our local growers that we want to encourage them to expand, because we love to deliver fresh, truly fresh food, not frozen food, but truly fresh food to our students. And it just sends a loud message that TUSD is in the community, and we want the community in TUSD.
How is the search going for an independent auditor?
You know, we've totally handed that over to the audit committee. And so what our human resource department does, they take the applications and resumes, they hand them to our audit committee. Our audit committee looks through them, and they determine, you know, if they want to interview people or they don't want to interview people. And to this point, they're continuing to look. And I mean, we have very impressive people on the audit committee. We have a banker from the Bank of Arizona. We have a CPA. We have a financial planner. We have the CFO for the county superintendent's office, and a CPA. I mean, we have very, very good people on the committee. So they're looking for a quality person, and I stay far, far away from that. I want it to be an impartial person that comes in and helps us do better.
Well, audits do continue on in the district. In fact, an audit from, I believe, Massachusetts-based District Management Council did an audit recently saying TUSD's effort to decrease discipline and improve achievement has fallen short.
Sure. So that doesn't speak overall to overall district numbers or overall academic achievement. What that's speaking to is our learning support coordinators that were put in place two superintendents ago. And so their role has evolved and evolved and evolved. And so one of the things that we're not shying away from are audits, of course. We did a curriculum audit, and because of that, what we provide in the classroom every day is much more consistent, and it's informed by teachers informing other teachers, and it's quality. Our financial practices have improved. That's why we don't lay people off. We're not closing schools, and things are moving well, and we're honoring pay raises to all our employees. And so this audit, when the special master brought it up, we didn't fight him on it. We agreed to it. And there are things in there that we have to improve. And, you know, I don't look at this as a black eye. I look at it as an opportunity to address those areas and do better. And if in the end we can't meet the standard, then we're going to have to change what we're doing. But I do believe we have the people and the vision, as we have this report in our hands, to do the right thing with it.
You mentioned the special master, and of course, TUSD has been under this DSEG order for, is it 30 years?
Yeah, it goes back to, this case is historic. It's as old as I am. Each year I get older, it does too. It started in 74 and made it to the courts right around 77. So it's as old as I am.
So where does it go from here, this thing?
You know, we're working really hard, and we're making good ground, and we're about 2 years away from being able to apply for unitary status. And, you know, everything's focused on the green factors. So what are the green factors? Well, questions such as, do you operate a dual school system? In other words, are there schools for just, you know, minority kids, and only minority kids go to those, and minority kids are denied schools where white kids go? And of course, we know in Arizona that doesn't exist. That's a whole state deal. I mean, kids can go anywhere with charters and choice and open enrollment. They can even go to other districts. And so, you know, I believe we're meeting that one. And then there's questions about, do we have disparities in our athletics and extracurricular programs? And we don't. We have a good representation of our minority students. I mean, we are a minority majority district in all of those areas. So as we take a look at the green factors, those things that the court's going to consider, we've made great progress. We've documented that progress, and we continue to move forward. So we're 2 years out from asking the court for unitary status and moving forward.
Are we the longest running district with one of these DSEG cases?
I believe we're the longest running large district. There are some others out there, but we're one of the largest that are still in the mix on this. And, the whole basis for why this thing was filed years and years ago has shifted some. But, you know, we're not going to throw stones at the past. We're going to look to the future, and we're going to make sure that we're providing that quality for our kids everywhere in everything we do.
What's going on with Mexican American Studies?
We continue to offer our culturally relevant courses from an African American and a Latino point of view in history and literature. We continue to develop those courses. We've purchased multicultural books to the tune of $1.4 million to ensure that we have a balanced view. But these move beyond just African American and Latino points of view. They include Native American, Asian American, as well as our children from the Middle East, Far East, and Africa. So we continue to develop those courses, but not for the point of dividing people, but for showing and celebrating how similar we are, and then celebrating those things that make us unique, but bring us together. So that's the focus, and that should have been, and if you talk to people who know the program, was the focus, I think, from the inception.
And how does the Department of Education, how is it viewing? What's their current feeling about it?
We've continued to work well with the state superintendent, and I'll actually be in Phoenix on Monday with two members of my staff, my multicultural director and one of my coordinators for culturally relevant curriculum design. All three of us will be in Phoenix working on creating standards in Arizona to honor the African American and the Latino point of view in the development of this great state.
How is the bond rating doing? TUSD got word from Moody's Investors Service. This district has a A2 rating, I believe, for the general bond obligations, but there was still kind of a negative outlook.
Right. So when you take a look at the bond rating, it's not based on 1 year. So Moody's takes into consideration a myriad of interesting factors, and some of them I think will shock some of your listeners. Of course, the most obvious is Moody's still notes when TUSD declared it had a $17 million shortfall some 3 or 4 years ago. Moody's also takes into consideration all the schools that TUSD had closed in the past. And so those are some obvious things that you would think Moody's would take into consideration. The reason we maintain our strong bond rating is our current practices have been really good, and we've ended the year with books balanced in money in terms of cash on hand. So that's one of the other factors, is how you're doing now. But they don't forget the recent past. The other thing they look at, and this was kind of a shocker to me, is they look at what your state leadership and governing board leadership are doing. And as Arizona is now 50th in per pupil funding, they consider that. But the other thing they consider is your board rhetoric. And so they have noted that we have on occasions board members who say very negative things out in the media or don't portray things in a positive way and have a very negative, pessimistic outlook. And so they've taken that into consideration because they know that has an impact on enrollment, that has an impact on people and families moving into a neighborhood. And so when Moody's shared that with us, it did kind of catch me there. And so, you know, as a board, part of the reason in our last workshop, we were talking about bringing the board together and board rights and responsibilities and working with each other from a dignified point of view. It's not just good practice. It also has financial implications.
About bringing the board together, how is that going?
You know, we had a really good workshop.
Were all the board members there?
You know, Bill, two board meetings ago, all five board members were there. They were all engaged. They all stayed. This last board meeting, right as we got to that item to begin working on that work, one of the board members got up and walked out. And so I pulled the item until I can get all five board members there to work together.
Okay. We are at right at 12:30 now on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Sanchez, thank you very much, and hope the semester goes well. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Always a pleasure, sir.
All right. We're going to be talking with one of the world's leading wildfire experts, certainly one of the top in this country and internationally. Dr. Stephen Pine is going to join us on the live line. A lot to talk about with what's going on with the wildfires in North America. Be right back.
In Arizona Stadium to experience the thrill of the 2015 Arizona football season. Be there for the big hits, miracle catches, and game-winning field goals. Be there as your Wildcats make history and march towards a Pac-12 championship. Be there to create priceless memories with family, friends, and fellow fans.
The home opener is Thursday, September 3rd versus UTSA. Tickets start at $12 for adults and $7 for kids. Call 621-CATS or visit arizonawildcats.com/UTSA.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Attending Pima Community College means success for you and your family at less than a quarter the cost of trade schools or four-year universities. Partnering with business leaders, Pima creates programs tailored to help you succeed in today's high-demand jobs and offers two-year associate degrees that transfer to universities nationwide. Whether your goal is a new career or transferring to a four-year college, Pima Community College can help you succeed. Call 206-4500 or visit pima.edu.
Hello?
Hey, honey. Just packing and getting ready for my flight home.
Great! You didn't forget about Adam's soccer game, did you?
Hey, it's his last game of the season. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
But you land at 4. How can you be there by 5?
No problem. I'm flying into Tucson. I parked right by the terminal, and the soccer field is only 10 minutes from the airport.
Flying from Tucson International Airport is convenient and cost-effective. Check out our cost comparison calculator at flytucson.com or text the word COMPARE to 51313. Fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Hi. Wouldn't you like a voice like mine talking about your business? Saying things like, thank you for calling, or press 1 for hours and directions. Well, it can. Cox Business offers Voice Manager, allowing you to get a professional voice to record your voicemail greeting. And with my voice, you'll need to warn whoever manages your lead gen data, because your customer base is about to expand. If you don't like my voice...
There's always mine.
Thank you for calling. All our customers are important to us.
How do you like that?
I think mine might be more appropriate.
You don't know that.
I can do fancy accents.
As good as this.
Make a great impression before you answer the phone. Cox Business Internet and Voice Manager is only $99 per month. Plus, get your first month free. Bundle and save today. Visit coxbusiness.com. Ends 8/30/15. Includes Cox Business Internet 10 and Voice Manager Essential. Excludes taxes and fees. Visit coxbusiness.com for details. Actual speeds vary. Other restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Are you looking for a great weekend getaway? Well, please consider the arts and recreation-oriented historic community of Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. We send so many Buckmaster Show listeners over to that area. Many experience the area for the first time, and they all come back saying, I had a great time. The mile-high elevation makes for mild nights and mild days and cool nights, and so much to do, like exploring the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. No shortage of great places to stay, like Pinos Altos Cabins, Little Toad Creek Inn, and Silver City KOA. You can find out more by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Well, the summer of 2015 will go down in history as the year of the big fires in the states of Alaska and Washington. The Okanaga Complex fires of central Washington and southern British Columbia, Canada, really has been a monster that's required the services of wildland firefighters from as far away as New Zealand and Australia. But wildfire statistics are a poor proxy for what is happening, according to one of the country's leading experts on wildfires. Joining us now on the Buckmaster Show live line from Flagstaff, Dr. Stephen Pine. Dr. Pine is a Regents Professor in the School of Life Sciences at Arizona State University. Dr. Pine's new book is titled Between Two Fires, A Fire History of Contemporary America. He has three previous books, including Voyager, The Last Lost World, and Fire, Nature and Culture. Dr. Pine, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
So we recently had the 99th birthday celebration for the National Park Service, offering a free entrance to the parks, well, 58 parks and 350 other sites. In the Pacific Northwest and Northern Rockies, park visitors might also be hoping that the entry comes with a free respirator and x-ray vision, because I'll tell you, the smoke from those large wildfires is obscuring some of the most stunning vistas in the world that inspired the preservation of these places and the creation of the National Park Service in the first place. Why are the fires up there so bad this year? Is this just an anomaly, or is this something we better get used to, like the new norm?
Well, it's probably a bit of all. In 1970, the Wenatchee Complex, burning not far from where some of those are today, was 170,000 acres. It's just that they haven't come year in and year out, and so we forget them generation by generation. And there were really horrific fires in the 19th and early 20th century as well. So in some ways, we had... we've gone through several cycles of large fires. The 19th century was really a horrific time, largely because of land clearing and logging, with lots of debris around, lots of fires, burned down whole communities. And that was part of the impetus to set land aside to protect it from this kind of fire and axe wreckage. And so then we set in a long period. It took several decades to sort of stabilize things, control the fire scene, create an infrastructure, stop people from burning, and the climate was favorable. And then the climate flips, the fuels had built up from that period of recovery, and suddenly the scene is returning. And it strikes us as odd because our historical aperture isn't that large, but it's almost as though some historic disease like polio or tuberculosis that we thought we had pretty much controlled is coming back. And in some ways, we now have to realize it never really left. It just went into these troughs and crests. And we were in a benign period. And the last couple of decades, we've been in a much more aggressive period. And that is likely to continue.
How is climate change or global warming affecting all of this, Dr. Pine?
Well, it's certainly amplifying the signals, if you will. It's certainly a contributor, but, let's not have the fire story hijacked by the climate change story. We would have serious fire problems even if we were within our historic range. To take an Arizona example, the 2011 season, the monster Wallow Fire, 500+ thousand acres. Well, people were saying, wow, you'd have to go back to 1977 to find conditions like these, or maybe 1955. Well, those are both within my lifetime. So fire is a reaction. It synthesizes its surroundings. So there are lots and lots of things that are being integrated by it. And climate change is certainly a part of that, but it's not the whole story. And that's actually good news, because if it's just climate change, we're in for disasters. I mean, build bunkers and wait it out for a few centuries. But in fact, because there's all kinds of stuff, there are many, many ways to intervene and mediate the consequences.
It was, I believe, Dr. Pine, the 1960s that we began this prescribed burning to try to put good fire back in order to dampen the wildfires and promote ecological health. Has it helped? Has it paid off, or what?
Well, to back up just a little bit, the modern era really starts in 1910, and we entered an attempt to exclude fire, all fires. And by the 1960s, it was clear that this was not succeeding, because we took out good fires as well as bad fires. So in the 60s, there's an attempt at all levels to reform, a revolution in ideas and institutions to start restoring fire, restoring natural fire to wild landscapes, to restoring prescribed or controlled fire to working landscapes, get fire back in, and use tame fire to dampen the effects of uncontrolled wildfire. And it's interesting how fast this revolution occurred, so that the first salvos were in 1962. By 1968, the National Park Service has reformed its fire policy to accommodate that. It took another 10 years for the Forest Service to finally work the policy through its machinery, but by 1978, it had done the same and changed its institutional arrangements. So really, we've had for 37 years, 47 years in some cases, the policies in place to do what we think needs to be done. These are not new issues. And the interesting question is, why didn't the revolution take? What happened? Why did it have to be, why are we now discussing the same stuff and talking about changing policies to stuff that in effect was in place 40 to almost 50 years ago?
And why are we? What's the answer?
Well, a number of things happened. It was a revolution. from above, and it had to be to work its way down through lots of local units and individual personalities, but it's also politics. All of the fire revolution was a part of a general environmentalist movement, and that was completely bipartisan. And in 1980, partisan politics starts changing, starts making itself felt in environmental issues, and there's a real pushback. And fire itself wasn't a particular target, except the Reagan administration thought the problem was solved, and so that was an area where you could begin downsizing and shifting funds to the military and other things that interested them. But it didn't stop, but it stalled things. They couldn't roll it back, but nobody could move forward, and we had to wait until the 1994 fire season where it starts picking up again. So you've got a change of administration, new interests, and frankly, an Arizona as Secretary of Interior, Bruce Babbitt, he took a personal interest in fire and helped to push the agenda along. But by then, it's too little too late. Everything is, all the toggles are flipping in the other direction, and everything's lining up to favor really large fires, expensive fires. And Americans have changed how we live on the land, where more and more of us are moving out to exurbs, scattered suburbs. And so what had been a rural buffer zone that gave us some room to maneuver with large fires is shrinking. And we're having to put more and more resources into really urban fire service models rather than land management, which was the basis of fire reform and prescribed fire. So ever since then, the last couple of decades, we've just been chasing the scene. And there are lots of people, bless them, who think that with enough will and conviction, we can get ahead of this problem. And I have to say, my sense is that boat has sailed. And the magnitude of issues from climate change, invasive species, the legacy of fuels buildup, how we're living on the land, you just add over and over and over, adding all that up, we're not going to get ahead of it. And we're going to have to be selective. We can provide protection in certain communities, maybe municipal watersheds, sequoia groves, things like that. But generally, we're going to have to find ways to accommodate free-burning fire on our wildlands and probably a good fraction of our rural lands, because we're not going to have the resources to be able to fight them. And we have to face the fact that, it's different cities and country. In a city, every fire you put out is a problem solved. Mm-hmm. In a wildland, every fire you put out is a problem put off.
Right.
So every time we nominally succeed and we fought the fire to a standstill, that problem is just getting worse.
We're going to take a break right here with Dr. Stephen Pine, Regents Professor in the School of Life Sciences at Arizona State University. His latest book is published by the University of Arizona Press. It's titled Between Two Fires, A Fire History of Contemporary America. And we'll continue with Dr. Pine right after this.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kevin Lehman. I've got one wife, five kids, two grandchildren, and termites. Termites is serious business. I'm telling you, talk about eating your home away, they can do it. Best call ever made, five-star. Five-star termite and pest control. A great job. They leave no mess, they're economical, and guess what? They're friendly to our environment. 886-0045.
We're five-star pest control. We know what bugs you.
Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary works to end the senseless abuse of horses and burros so these noble creatures can live free of pain and suffering. Its ranch in Amado is home to dozens of rescued equines who receive special care as they await new, loving homes. Won't you help? Visit equinevoices.org. Equine Voices, a voice for all equines who cannot speak for themselves.
Ready to do some antiquing? If you love a special one-of-a-kind object like I do, I strongly suggest Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American art, and they have the best selection in town of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, and on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
American Openings is pleased to be a sponsor of Good News Radio Broadcasting, featuring local news and information on AM 1030 KVOI, the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ on KGMS 940 AM, positive and encouraging music on 88.1 FM K-Love, and pop classics on KCEE 690 AM. American Openings is a locally owned door and window manufacturer, concerned about our community and proud to be a partner with Good News Radio to help make our community a better place.
The Regional Transportation Authority is delivering on its promises with more than 660 completed transportation improvements, pedestrian and bicycle safety upgrades, new sidewalks and bike lanes, as well as roadway transit and traffic signal technology improvements are helping people and goods move across our region. The RTA and its member jurisdictions are working together to offer you more options. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting the stories missed by the mainstream media. Our sources bring you regional, national, and international news from a different perspective. Opinion from Emil Franzi, Phil Richardson, and other top national columnists. Plus, Eric Peters with auto reviews, Bob Garver on movies, Rebecca Guthrie on books, a section on Western heritage, and sports coverage, too. It's a cross-section of information found nowhere else. SOAZNewsX.com. Published Mondays and Thursdays. Subscriptions are free at SOAZNewsX.com.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. On our live line, we're speaking with Dr. Stephen Pine, Regents Professor in the School of Life Sciences at Arizona State University. His most recent book has just been published by the University of Arizona Press. It's titled Between Two Fires, A Fire History of Contemporary America. Dr. Pine has a score of books to his credit. He's told fire's history in the United States, Australia, Canada, Europe, and the earth overall. In his earlier life, he spent 15 seasons with the North Rim Longshots at the Grand Canyon National Park. Dr. Pine, was there an incident that kind of brought you to this subject early in your life?
No, I had no particular attraction to fire. I mean, I grew up in Phoenix, basically. And then, a few days after I graduated from high school, I got a job at Grand Canyon as a laborer, and just a fluke, one of those life-changing serendipitous moments. One of the guys on the fire crew in the North Rim called in and said he couldn't come. And they looked around for someone to fill the role, and there I was signing papers. So they asked if I wanted to go over, and I said, sure. I mean, I was 18. I didn't know what I was saying. And it was a great life. I mean, for me, it was the best of all lives and the best of all places. And I kept returning all the way through college and graduate school and beyond. And then finally I really couldn't stay in the field anymore. Had a family and said, okay, I've got to do my smoke chasing as a scholar. And I'll start these sort of long histories. Nobody else was doing that. And in some ways, almost nobody is doing it now. I mean, there's still most of the world is available if anybody wants to take up this kind of scholarship.
Let's go to our live line. Our friend Jim Kelly has a question or comment for Dr. Stephen Pine. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, Doctor. You know, one of the things I hear when I travel in the rural areas of Arizona, they said that real estate should earn, not burn. Is there a place for logging? Is there a place for those people that, you know, to basically log the land and keep the, you know, the forest beds clean so that we don't have fuel for those fires?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it's a common one. And let me give you an answer this way. The first two parts. One is that logging and fire do different things. In logging, you take the big stuff and leave the little. A fire burns the little stuff and leaves the big. So the next time you see a fire that is crowned through a forest, what do you see standing? You see the stuff left that logging would have taken. So logging, unless you really clean it up afterwards, and that cleanup is costly and has its own environmental issues with slash burning and so forth, it doesn't pay for itself. What does help fire is thinning. And in this case, you're targeting the smaller stuff, the kinds of things that really move fire along. And the difficulty there is that you don't have an existing good market for them. And they've been struggling for a couple of decades to find a market for it. And there are some experiments underway. The Four Fry experiment in northern Arizona, 2.4 million acres, is trying to pay for itself in this way, but they've had several false starts and are stumbling. So that's part of it. The other thing is that there may be a place for some prescribed logging. I mean, low scale targeted stuff. This isn't going to be enough to support local communities with large mills and the rest, but there could be some economic payoff from it. And there might be some prescribed grazing. If not with livestock, then with wildlife. I mean, we've got really large elk herds, larger than historic. So in some ways, we are doing some management. But all these things are smaller scale. You're not going to solve the fire problem by logging. In fact, from the 18th century on, as long as we've got recorded history of humans and fire, settlement history, the track of large fires follows the track of land clearing and logging. And that's only broken well into the 20th century after we've reserved sites to stop that.
In the new book, Between Two Fires, you start off talking about the great fires of 1910. Can you kind of give us some historic perspective, Dr. Pine? What kind of terrain are we talking about? How big a deal was that 1910 incident?
Yeah. It was a large fire, but large fires don't become great fires unless they interact with the society in a way. The fires were in the northern, primarily in the northwest. The big blow-up specifically was about 3.25 million acres in the northern Rockies, August 20th and 21st, killed 78 firefighters in six different incidents the same afternoon and evening, traumatized the young Forest Service, which was only 5 years old, and its charismatic chief, Gifford Pinchot, had just been fired earlier that year. So this was a real crisis moment for them. It was a real trial by fire. They spent nearly $1 million over budget fighting the fires. They could have been bankrupt if Congress hadn't, supplemented it. In effect, the whole American way of wildland firefighting first converged in 1910, and it permanently stamped a generation. The Forest Service was composed almost wholly of young people, and the next three chiefs of the Forest Service, all the way up through 1939, were all personally on the fire line and determined they would never allow that to happen again. on their watch. So that really created a policy that in some ways we're still living with.
Boy, do we know what caused those great fires? Was that a natural cause, or was it man-caused?
Well, like most of fire stories, it's both. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes them interesting, is that it's the interaction. So there was lots of land available, but a lot of this had been chewed up with mines. There was a lot of slash lying around. One of the main centers of the blow-up, the St. Joe Valley, had just opened a transcontinental railroad line the year before, so there was lots of stuff left over from that, and the railroad was opening up logging sites, so there was lots of slash from there. Lightning started it, just as it's doing this year, the same rhythms, the same pattern, almost the same dates. It's kind of eerie, but there were lots of human-caused fires. People brush burning, campfires that escaped, prospectors would burn off land to exposed rocks. And then once people were hired to fight fires, there were lots of accounts of people setting fires so that they could then be hired. So it's a real mix. It's not to say that this was a great natural disaster if we unwisely tried to fight it. It was a nature and American society colliding, and people making the best choices they could at the time. The real issue is why afterwards did we decide to double down and fight fires rather than say, hey, this isn't going to work.
Right.
Maybe there's another way. And in fact, that same month, August 1910, there was a big controversy that became known as the light burning controversy, which said this whole fire suppression approach is wrong. We should be out lighting fires like the American Indian used to do.
Yeah.
And indeed, the Secretary of Interior at the time said he agreed.
All right. Got to go. Dr. Pine, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Dr. Stephen Pine, the book Between Two Fires. I'm Bill Buckmaster. Join us this afternoon for Tucson at 4, 3 hours of local talk, 6 to 9, right here on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Have a great afternoon and evening.
Intelligent talk 24/7. AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.